IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
Welcome to the IL Women Podcast. I am IL Editor-in-Chief Matt Kinnear, joined by Inside Lacrosse Women's Editor Hallie Quillenin. Hallie, it's that really exciting, really busy time of year, one of the busiest weekends that we have here at Inside Lacrosse. It's conference tournament weekend, and then Selection Sunday, where teams' fates are sealed. Are they going to the tournament or not? Hallie, how pumped are you for this weekend?
I'm excited. Yeah, this is kind of what this is what we work so hard for. This weekend in particular is always one of my favorites because there's so much action going on and so many teams are able to secure their fate and then hear their fate pretty shortly after. So I'm excited for the 11 conference tournaments in the Division I landscape that'll take place this weekend. And I'm excited to be part of the selection show again come Sunday evening in Indianapolis.
Folks can watch Hallie on NCAA.com for the selection show. She will be there as the picks are made, and we'll also be following the coverage on ILWomen.com all weekend. Hallie, this is really kind of the payoff for us as people who follow this sport. You know, we're there in February where it's snowy and miserable, and we're on the sidelines and just cold and waiting for these weeks in May where we get to kind of enjoy the weather and watch the most exciting part of the season and kind of the rest of the world joins us with everyone's eyes on lacrosse.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think that there's a lot of fun action ahead, certainly later in the month of May, but it all kicks off this weekend.
We have a very special podcast this week, Bracketology Talk. Obviously, it's one of the more popular recurring things that we do on InsideLacrosse.com. We kick off our bracketology coverage on ILWomen.com with a very special guest. We have Virginia Tech coach John Sung, who you spoke with earlier this week, Hallie. He was the chair of the NCAA selection committee, and right now he's no longer on the committee, so that kind of gives him some freedom to talk about the process a little bit. Tell us what it's like from someone's perspective who is in the room making these decisions. Hallie, how did that call go, and what did you learn from him?
It was great. I always love catching up with John. He's certainly one of my favorites and one of my go-tos to kind of put my ear to the ground and, you know, figure out what's going on in the women's lacrosse landscape. And he used to be on the selection committee and gave great insight. I think that, you know, he really outlines primary criteria versus secondary criteria and how that affects the selection process come Sunday. One thing he'll dive into, the process is certainly a season-long process. You know, those members on the committee are identifying these teams and really following these teams throughout the entire season. You know, they're not just watching how conference tournaments play out come this weekend and last weekend. So he gets into that and, you know, he talks to me about primary criteria, secondary criteria, and how a lot of the times they come down to comparing one school versus another. So I think that you guys will enjoy the conversation just as much as I did.
Definitely. This is not an easy task, picking this bracket of the teams that go to the NCAA tournament. Lots of ins and outs in this. So everybody, please enjoy Hallie's conversation with John Sung, breaking down the selection criteria.
And we're joined here by John Sung of Virginia Tech. John, you spent years on the NCAA selection committee. You've since cycled off, and you led your team to a historic year this year down in Virginia. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So NCAA tournament time, Selection Sunday. I know that there are a number of teams that are looking to punch their automatic bids this weekend, 11 of the 13 women's lacrosse conferences. There's also 13 at-large bids standing there. You know, when you look at those teams on the bubble when you were on the committee, what's the biggest factor, if you could pinpoint one thing, that gets that team into the tournament?
You know, I don't necessarily think there's one thing. I mean, there is a criteria that the NCAA committee has kind of stood by in the last, you know, 5-6 years. And, you know, the criteria really hasn't changed. They have five equal first, first criteria that they look at, and then they move into a secondary criteria. And so there really isn't one that is that stands out, but there is definitely a couple that are, you know, they're pretty black and white, you know, from a standpoint of, you know, the five criteria they look at is RPI, head-to-head, common opponents, significant wins and loss, and then your top 10 schedule and your win percentage inside your top 10 schedule. And so, you know, how the committee values wins and losses, like significant wins and significant losses, has always been interesting from year to year. And then obviously, you know, how you schedule is really important. You know, they really want to make sure that teams put themselves out there and that they also win games. It's going to be really important. But, you know, the criteria is pretty wide open, and, you know, and anyone that wants to spend their time to figure this out could definitely look and see how this committee, you know, moves forward. And it's the same every single year, and there's no eyeball test. They try to stay away from that just because, you know, the way the sport is, and, you know, there's teams all over the country, and just, you know, no one has time to watch all those games, especially the committee members. But, yeah, so there's five criteria, and that one necessarily has more weight than the other.
And, you know, you start looking at these criteria. RPI is one that, you know, I'd be lying if I said I understood. I think I would be lying if I said most people understood. You know, the RPI rankings came out, and you have a team like North Carolina who's ranked ahead of Maryland. You know, certainly their strength of schedule plays into that. Let's just take those two teams, for example. You look at RPI. Do you think if Maryland wins out, that could be a projected scenario that North Carolina could be the number one seed? Or is that when head-to-head comes in and plays that secondary factor in seeding?
Yeah, I think with when you start to look at it, obviously you look at all the criteria, so RPI just being one component. And when people want to know what RPI is, because I do think that's like a mystery. Everyone's like, well, how does the NCAA figure out what RPI is in our sport? And it's pretty actually easy to figure out. It's your win percentage. So you get 25% of your win percentage, you get 50% of your opponent's win percentage, then 25% of your opponent's win percentage. So it gives you a number, obviously a 0.7, 0.5 number, that a decimal number that'll basically give you the RPI, but that's just one value. And you know, when you're putting in wins and losses, the computer doesn't know who you beat. You know, it doesn't see you. It sees that you beat a 10-3 team, and that 10-3 team might be, you know, a mid-major having a phenomenal year, or a 10-3 team might be a Notre Dame. But that computer cannot tell the difference between the two. It just understands, hey, this team is winning, therefore that they, from a math standpoint, is essentially having a better winning percentage. But then it counts in to see, well, who are they playing? You know, so that opponent, you know, your opponent's win percentage is really important, because that's half of the RPI. You know, so making sure that you play, you know, teams that are very strong, and then obviously your opponent's opponent, which is even a little bit harder, but, you know, it's definitely things that you can see, and, you know, Glaxbauer has done a great job of keeping everyone up to date from, you know, Jump Street of, if you jump on RPI, you can actually look at all that stuff. And they're pretty close to the NCAA, so I would say they're not perfect, but, you know, if you match it, it's pretty close. But, you know, with Maryland and North Carolina, that RPI value, the committee looks to see if it's significant. And there's always there's a number that they use. It's, you know, especially when you're comparing two numeric values, that they look at, and usually if it's been somewhere between 0.004 or 0.005, that if it's not greater than that, then it's not a big enough jump to push one team over the other in the RPI category. So, you know, with Maryland and North Carolina, because I don't know the NCAA's numbers with what they have, I would assume it's very, very close. And being on the committee for the last 4 years, I would think that it would be very, very close again. And so that RPI usually gets washed out where no one, neither one can win that category because their RPIs are so close, you know, because you're talking, you know, thousands of, you know, decimal points of difference. But then you start to look at head-to-head where Maryland definitely has the head-to-head. And then you look at common opponents. And, you know, this is where it gets tricky in the NCAA, in that selection room, because, you know, Carolina might have more opportunities to play, you know, obviously conference opponents because they go into the tournament more than Maryland had an opportunity to play them. And so you might have, you know, there might be a wash in there because it can't really, you know, I guess the water is a little bit muddy with looking at the common opponents. So sometimes that washes out, but then obviously significant losses and wins and losses. And when they look at that as the committee, we look at who are you beating, not the name of the team, but where they are. So obviously, if you beat the number one ranked team and it happens to be the head-to-head, well, that's still a significant win. You know, so I think those are really important things for, I guess, the general public to know. And maybe it makes it a little bit more dangerous that I know this stuff, but, you know, especially, you know, when you're looking at, you know, your own team. But and then the last category is the top 10. Like I said, it's the top 10 hardest RPI ranking teams on your schedule and your win percentage over them. And the NCAA views anything over 500 as a winning season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is a very tough category for the committee to decipher because there are teams who their top 10 is off the charts. They might be the number one top 10 schedule in the country, but they're 4-6. You know, and then you're comparing them against someone that has, you know, the 50th or the, you know, the 30th hardest schedule, and they're 8-2. And so you can't really compare it because it's not comparing, you know, apples to apples. And that's one of the things that we want to make sure that as we're comparing teams that we keep it on a very level playing field. And so, and if we can't, then we can't use, it's very hard for us to give that check or that, you know, that nod in that category for that team.
Absolutely. And then, you know, looking at even, you know, significant wins, I think that that's really something that I've said in a number of broadcasts we brought up in the polls. There are a number of teams out there that were not in the NCAA tournament last year. They were not in that at-large conversation that already have significant wins. You know, you throw into that conversation certainly Colorado, your Hokies, Elon, Albany. Do you think that the bubble teams that don't have significant wins are at a disadvantage this year just because so many teams have stormed onto the scene in 2017?
Yeah, I do think it's tough because you want to make sure that those teams can compete at this level, you know, and obviously when you're, because we're talking about crowning a national champion, not just, you know, validating and getting to the NCAA tournament. But I think one of the things, you know, having that significant win definitely does help, but it's, you know, sometimes you wish that that category is worth like 2 points, like two check marks, but it's not. You know, it's no different than RPI and, or no different than head-to-head, but, you know, just in a perfect world, you just don't get to play everybody. So I do think the significant wins is maybe a little bit more important. You know, obviously the significant losses is, you know, when you're taking losses outside the top, you know, essentially the top 30, that's when things kind of get a little squirrely.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't, you know, if you lose in the top 20, it doesn't really penalize you. You know, when you're looking at that. But when you have that loss outside of 30 and it starts to get into the 40s, I mean, you're talking about teams who do not, you know, will not have an opportunity to be in the conversation for the NCAA tournament. And, you know, so we really got to, you know, they really make sure that, you know, they look at that. But, you know, it just doesn't weigh as much as maybe that we think. But that category is one that it's tough to wash out. You know, it's easier to wash out the top 10 category and the common opponents because there might be an odd number. But, you know, so the significant wins does play a pretty decent size role in it too.
And significant wins, significant losses, you know, is it just a W or an L in that column? Or do you look at the margin of win and loss?
No. No, and that was one thing when I got on the committee that they made very, very, you know, they wanted to be like, coach, you need to know this. And I'm like, what's that? And they're like, and this is the best advice I could give any coaches, a win is a win and a loss is a loss. It doesn't matter. If you went out and beat someone by 20 and the other team you're comparing them beat them by one in triple overtime, guess what? You can't differentiate that. You know, so that's how the committee operates, and it's crazy to think about it that way, because, you know, yeah, you know, you'd think someone who beat them by 20 versus someone who beat them, someone who beat them by one in triple overtime, you know, there's a lot of things that you can't, you know, control, home field, away, officials, the whole nine yards. So the committee is told, there's, you know, they're told in the beginning, you look at wins and losses, not goal differential.
Definitely. And, you know, you look at the secondary criteria. I mean, we've touched on those primary criteria. Secondary, last six games, results against teams already placed in the tournament. How often in your experience when you were on the committee do those bubble teams come down to this secondary criteria?
You know, I'm trying to remember how many times we've used it. It's pretty rare. Unless there are ties kind of coming into it, I would probably say that, you know, it does make a difference. Obviously, we want teams who are getting, you know, who are playing well at the end. That's definitely something that we want to look at. But most of the time, the primary criteria, we want to look at the entire body of work. And, you know, your last six games might be great, might not be. But the last six games that, again, it's just not wins or losses. It's who you're playing. Mm-hmm. So some people, their last six games might be in a mid-major conference and they're 6-0, but their RPI is 100 in there because there's a second. It's actually last six games plus the RPI for the last six games or your strength of schedule. So they're going to keep into count. So it gets pretty, again, it becomes very difficult because it's like the top 10, the top 10 category. But then, again, results against teams that are selected, that's important. You know, that's a pretty easy one to look at. You know, do they have wins against teams that are in, or do they not? You know, and usually what we're looking at is, do they have wins?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not very rarely they're going to have a team that's, you know, 4-0 in that category, and then we're pushing them into the bubble. But, you know, I feel like that's the easier one to see versus the last six games, because there is a strength of schedule component to it.
And let's look at conferences. You know, there are certain conferences this year that have come on that, you know, we talk about significant wins and, you know, teams that have jumped into the top 20. You know, the CAA is a very interesting conference to look at this weekend, in that typically they have sent two teams to the NCAA tournament. They have three teams that have significant wins. Have you seen kind of a shift in certain conferences? You know, the Ivy League a couple of years ago, they sent two. This year, it's almost all but guaranteed they sent three. When conferences are shifting up, you know, what happens to those other conferences? What other conferences do you think that their success, the CAA, the Ivy, directly affects?
Yeah, obviously, you know, when you look at the big Power Five conferences, your ACC, your Big Ten, I think that's where you start to take those, you know, I think the ACC last year, you know, all but our Hokies went last year, so what, 7 out of 8 teams were there, and obviously the Big Ten had, I think, 4 in last year. Maybe it was a couple of years in the past where they've had 4 or even 5 teams in. I think, you know, those teams are taking away, you know, not necessarily taking away, but they're earning bids into the tournament, and I think that, you know, the CAA, you know, they're going to get 3 teams in this year. I think it's very hard to say because they have good head-to-head wins, they have, you know, a strong RPI, and then, you know, obviously they're going to have those significant wins. So 3 out of those, you know, 5 categories, they've got check marks in, and it's pretty, you know, the bubble. You know, I've been doing this for a while, so I can look at the RPI sheet and be like, okay, the bubble's probably going to be around 23 to, say, you know, into the 30s, right, is going to be the bubble. And, you know, probably no higher than, you know, 32, 33 is probably going to be the bubble. But because some of those teams still have significant wins in there. But I really think when you start to look at it, you know, you're going to have whatever the 11 AQs that are inside the top 30 right now. And once you kind of do the reverse math, if there's 11 people inside the top 30, you can figure out, well, we're going to go 11 spaces away from, you know, 13. So that gets you up to 24, and that's really kind of the hard cut line. And then everyone else is really on the bubble at that point.
And, you know, looking at the tournaments this weekend, if you're on the bubble, obviously you're hoping that Florida wins the Big East. If you're on the bubble, you're hoping Maryland wins the Big Ten. You know, being a coach of a team that's in that conversation, how confident are you with this weekend's selection show, and how do you prepare your team accordingly for the unknown? You know, you played your conference tournament last weekend.
Yeah, I think for any coach or any person, like, you know, you obviously want, you know, the favorites in those conferences, the people who have the highest RPI to get in. But I think that the teams that, you know, that have those conference, you know, championships this weekend, I don't really see that there's going to be, you know, anything major, you know, to happen. I mean, obviously for us, I think, you know, we held our own destiny this year, and we were really young, and just, you know, this is the whole change of regime. And we had opportunities. When you lose three games by one goal, like, you can't, you know, you had your chances. But, you know, so for us, it's you know, we just kind of sit and wait. And I think with all those teams that are on the bubble, it is to sit and wait. But I think that kind of the good thing is it's you know, where you're kind of watching out for, you know, is like a Patriot League. You know, if there's an upset there, that can burst the bubble. I think if there is, you know, an upset where, you know, if Delaware wins the CAA, that could be a huge bubble burster. You know, again, if High Point gets knocked out of the Big South, so those mid-majors, you know, that could possibly bring in that second, you know, a second Patriot League team, a second, you know, so all these conferences might be able to get a second team in, or, you know, do we get four CAA teams? You know, who does that hurt? You know, does that hurt the American East? And so there is a lot going on still. I mean, it's, you know, it's going to take care of itself. And, you know, sitting in the room in Indianapolis while they do this, I think is probably one of the coolest places to be a part of the selection. And that's something they started 2 years ago, where they started flying the committee members in. So they do it in person. You know, all year it's a conference call, you know, trying to rank teams and figure out, you know, just getting prepared for this one day. Or actually 2 days, it's a Saturday, Sunday event. But, you know, as they go through, you know, they're doing a lot of the work on, you know, on Saturday, the work gets done where they know who the AQs are, you know, whoever's AQs are done. And then obviously they're starting to kind of plot out teams where they think they're going to be. But, you know, I think, you know, any team that's on the bubble right now, they just got to kind of, you know, sit and wait. And I think, you know, every team had an opportunity to play their way in, and it's just, you know, this just shows the growth of the game. You know, when you have three CAA teams going in, that means, you know, lacrosse is growing, and it's you know, we have more teams, and, you know, it's just not the Power Five that just competes. And I think, you know, there's some interesting things that are happening in lacrosse, but I think that we're you know, we're seeing a change, you know, and I think it'll be awesome to see a couple, you know, two teams from the West get there. And, you know, it'll be an exciting time of year on that, you know, and be excited for those teams who get in on Sunday night.
And, you know, looking at the field this weekend, you know, are there certain conferences, you know, you mentioned a couple, you mentioned, you know, if Delaware wins the CAA, that'll burst the bubble. You know, are there a couple of conferences that you particular have your eye on this weekend, kind of watching all the action?
No, I'm, you know, I think for us, like I said, I think we've, you know, we had an opportunity in the ACC, and the ACC presents every opportunity for a team to get in. And, you know, especially that we play a tournament that every team gets in. And so, you know, to our championship. So you have another opportunity to play a top 20, you know, top 30, essentially, RPI team and get another win. And so, you know, I think for us, we're just, we're obviously patiently waiting and, you know, seeing whether or not, you know, we get to play another week of lacrosse, which would be, you know, unbelievable for our first year. But, It'll be interesting to see some of these tournaments take place. And, I think, it's always exciting to see what happens to the Big Ten. The CAA is probably the one that I think can go to any of those four teams could win it. And obviously the Ivy League is very strong. So, it'll be interesting to see come Sunday afternoon who kind of gets to the top and gets their name called.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, John, for joining us, and best of luck waiting it out this weekend.
Thank you.
We are back. That was a great conversation, Hallie. Good job on that. Really laying out the ins and outs of this bracket and everything that goes into it. Lots and lots of stuff to kind of take in from that. And Hallie, this is the fun part here. We're going to kind of go a little bit of who's in, who's out, who are the locks, who are the bubble busters. A lot of info here that I know a lot of people are dying to hear. You ready for this?
I am ready to roll.
Excellent. Well, the thing that we do know, there are automatic qualifiers to the NCAA tournament. And kind of based on either the two teams that have already won conference tournaments or the guys who are number one seed heading into this weekend's conference tournaments, these are the teams that are kind of the top seed so far. We have in the A-10 UMass, we have ACC North Carolina, which has already locked up their bid, Stony Brook in the America East, Coastal Carolina in the Atlantic Sun, Florida in the Big East, High Point in the Big South, Maryland in the Big Ten, James Madison in the CAA, Cornell in the Ivy League, Canisius in the MAC, USC in the MPSF, Bryant in the NEC, and Loyola in the Patriot League. Hallie, going through these different teams that we kind of have as the top seeds in their conference tournaments, the one thing we do know from experience and from history is it doesn't pan out that easily. All the top seeds aren't going to win in these conference tournaments. Who are some of the ones that you expect maybe might be at the mercy of another team in their conference and kind of primed for an upset here in the conference tournaments?
You look top down. I think that the A-10, if history proves anything right, this is UMass's conference to lose. I don't see the Minute Woman falling. North Carolina's already clinched. Stony Brook, this will be their, I think that they've won 14, 15, 16, or 13, 14, 15, 16. They'll go for their fifth straight year. I think that Stony Brook, once again, they're kind of like a UMass. But let's get down to the A-Sun. Coastal Carolina did not win the Atlantic Sun regular season outright. They had a 9-1 record, as did Jacksonville. Clearly that head-to-head win pushes Coastal Carolina above, but I have them on upset alert. This has typically been Jacksonville's conference. I think that they will definitely provide a punch. So I think that the A-Sun is certainly a conference that you'd want to keep your eye on. I think Florida locks up the Big East, as they'll continue to do. They've had a dominant run, but certainly keep an eye on, Denver, Georgetown, Temple. In the Big South, I like the way High Point played, but, certainly don't overlook Winthrop. Don't overlook Campbell. I think that there's definitely some room for those teams there. Big Ten, if anyone can beat Maryland, it's Penn State has put up a huge fight so far. I think the Big Ten will be top to bottom. Great semifinal action to watch, but it's Maryland's conference to lose. You talk about the who might not win their conference in this discussion we just had. Looking up further than the CAA and the Ivy League, I think the CAA is one of, if not the most interesting conference to look at this weekend. You have James Madison, Towson, and Elon all ranked in the top 20 in RPI. That's the first time in this conference's history, I believe, that, you've had three teams ranked in the top 20 in the RPI heading into the postseason. But JMU lost to Delaware. And that's how they close their conference season. So Delaware is the fourth seed, and they're playing upset card. And I think that's a huge bubble buster right there. If Delaware comes into the CAA tournament and clinches the NCAA at-large bid, one, I think Delaware is the only team in this conversation that 100% really needs that at-large bid. You have Elon has strong quality wins, strong RPI, as does JMU, as does Towson. I think Towson's probably a bit ahead in the conversation of James Madison and Elon, but right now in the NCAA RPI, Towson 15, JMU 16, Elon 17. I think that all three of them have proven they're worthy of an at-large bid. If Delaware comes in and wins, we could see four CAA teams dancing. I think that Delaware, if they come in and they clinch the at-large, that could hurt a conference team, namely Elon. They're ranked a bit below JMU and Towson in that RPI. But that's awful news for Johns Hopkins. That's awful news for Albany. That's bad news for Denver. Other teams, should they not secure their conference win. And then moving our way down, the Ivy League. Cornell is the number one seed headed into the postseason at the Ivy League tournament. It was a three-way tie for first between Cornell, Penn, and Princeton. It came down to goal differential, and Cornell is hosting, and they are the number one seed, I think by one goal over Penn right now. And right now, Penn and Princeton ranked higher than Cornell in the polls, ranked higher than Cornell in the RPI. So if you could really look at one conference that whose number one seed might fall and could fall, my money's on Cornell, and taking nothing away from them. I'm a huge fan of Jenny Grapp and everything that her team has done this year up in Ithaca. But there's some tough competition in the Ivy League, and Penn and Princeton are two of the most elite teams in the country playing at that level. So I think it's really, you're throwing darts at a dartboard between those three, but don't overlook Harvard. Harvard has played some of these teams very close. They're coming off a tough loss against Cornell, but Harvard's a bubble buster, because if Harvard wins the Ivy League, all three of those teams, Cornell, Penn, and Princeton, are guaranteed, in my opinion, lock at large bids. So if the Ivy League in turn sends four teams dancing instead of three, that's another one of those situations for the bubble teams, the Albanys, the Temples, the Denvers, the Louisvilles of the world, and that takes one of their spots. So I think if there's two teams heading into this weekend as huge bubble busters, that's got to be Delaware, that's got to be Harvard. That could be Georgetown too. Georgetown, they beat Denver. So I think when you look at what Georgetown is capable of, they can certainly play up to the competition level and put up a fight. Georgetown, based on their RPI, based on, quality wins, they need an at-large bid to get in my opinion. They would need to beat a very, very talented Florida team in the championship game, likely. So the cards are stacked against them in that regard. But, I think that Georgetown has the ability because, they're not really on the bubble. Denver's on that bubble. So Denver certainly could be a bubble buster, but they're on that bubble. So if they were to win and Denver, Florida go dancing, or Temple even, but I think Georgetown could certainly shake things up because Temple and Denver are on that bubble. Then you look at the Patriot League, you look at A-10, UMass, Loyola, two teams that are on the bubble. If a team other than UMass or Loyola wins, does that bump the former out taking the place? Or do two teams from those leagues dance? So I think that there's still so much going on in the women's lacrosse landscape, which is exciting. I think that this is more of an up and down competitive year than we've seen, but still so many question marks. There's so few games getting played this weekend based on, what we've seen throughout the whole season, but so many games of huge impact as it pertains to what we're going to see Sunday night.
The CAA, I mean, just like you said, that's a really interesting conference, and that's one that readers and viewers of IO Women can catch you kind of involved in that one this weekend, right?
Yeah, I'll be on site. I'll be calling, providing the color analyst position to Lock Sports Network for the CAA semifinals, and I'm excited. I'm really excited to see. I've seen three of those four teams play this year in person. I haven't seen Denver in person. Certainly seen film and web streams, but I'm excited to see these teams play. I think the competition level will be very strong, and there's certainly a lot of action going on Friday night, but I'm excited to be a part of some of it at Towson.
We talked bubble watch. You talked a few of those teams already, but there's some teams that we know they don't need to win a conference tournament to get into the NCAA tournament. they're legitimate locks based on their resume that they've put together throughout the season. And when we talk about locks, we've got to start with Penn State out of the Big Ten. Hallie, looking at their resume, they've got pretty much everything you need to get a good seed and be in this NCAA tournament, don't they?
Penn State has so many quality wins. You know, you look at the wins they've put together over quality opponents, Albany, Towson, Cornell, Loyola, JMU, Princeton, Hopkins, Virginia, Northwestern. They almost beat Maryland. You know, their two losses, Colorado, Maryland, those aren't bad losses. They don't have a bad loss. Heading into the NCAA tournament, Penn State will host the first round. I think that that is inevitable. It does not matter how they do in the Big Ten tournament. Seeding is what's going to be decided this weekend for the Nittany Lions. I think if the team is going to beat Maryland in the Big Ten tournament, it's going to be Penn State. Penn State played them so well last time out. They really put together the perfect game. You know, in respect to the Terps, a team will have to put together their perfect game to beat Maryland this year. They're that strong. I think Penn State is that talented, and I think they're certainly capable of doing that. Regardless, you know, if Penn State wins this weekend, if they don't, they're in. You know, that's about as much of a lock as you can be on an at-large bid. You know, you look past Penn State, you have teams like Syracuse. I think Syracuse is certainly a lock. I think that they will host. I don't know if they're in the discussion to host first and second round. I don't know if they'll get that, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 seed. I think Penn State probably would be above Syracuse in the contention to get that fourth spot. Another lock, Princeton, Penn, you know, we discussed that. I think Cornell is also in this conversation. We just have Cornell and that automatic bid right now. The three of them are interchangeable. I think all three of them are, you know, whether one wins the tournament, the other two, they're locked for at large, is my opinion. And then looking down, you know, certainly less of a lock than the former that we just mentioned, Colorado. That's huge, too. I mean, this is a team that wasn't in the NCAA tournament last year, wasn't ranked last year, and it stormed onto the scene, spent most of the season in the top 10, you know, has a huge quality win over Penn State, beat Northwestern, has really Colorado. We did that feature on them, Moving Mountains. This has been the Cinderella team of 2017. I think the sky's the limit for 2018-19, you know, what Colorado's going to do in the Pac-12, but they are certainly dancing. You know, they're practicing all week. They know they're going to be in the NCAA tournament. I think it's another thing whether, yeah, I don't know if Colorado's in the host position, but they're certainly playing in the NCAA tournament. I think their resume proves just that. They're kind of in the position of, you know, who are we playing and where are we going? And for a team that's never been in the NCAA tournament before, it's going to be such an exciting Sunday for the Buffaloes. Looking past them, and this is where we kind of get to, in my opinion, these are the at-large locks, but could play bubble too. And that's, you know, Boston College, Virginia, Northwestern, Towson. And right now, as we mentioned, we don't have Towson in that winner spot for the CAA. JMU's there, they're the top seed, but interchangeable. I think Towson and JMU are very similar teams. JMU would be in this position if Towson were the top spot in the CAA right now. You know, this is where the bubble busters come in that we spoke about. You know, these teams could go from lock at larges to bubble teams really quickly if the inevitable doesn't happen, in tournaments like the CAA, the Big East, the Ivy League. You know, I think that there's still so much work to be done this weekend. But those are kind of the teams. And as I mentioned, the teams we mentioned first, those are more really the strong locks. But those are the teams that, you know, should all go right. And should the top seeds, you know, do what they've done all season long, I think they can sit confidently throughout the weekend, breathing a sigh of relief, knowing that they're in.
Hallie, one team in that kind of list that you mentioned that I find really interesting is Northwestern, just because of, you know, the perception of them. You know, Northwestern is obviously always so good that they've had a little bit of a down year and people might not perceive them as a lock, but you have them as a lock. And continuing with that, Johns Hopkins is one of the high bubble teams. that was that loss earlier in the year that was a controversial game that they had finished there. So what is it that you see in Northwestern's resume? And if that game was flip-flopped and Hopkins won, would you see their resumes kind of flip-flopped there as well?
Well, certainly in the fact that if Northwestern, you know, if that game, and this is certainly my opinion, that game should have been a Johns Hopkins win. The tail of the tape shows that. The ball was still in Jalen Nashville's stick when the clock hit zero. But interesting about that game, that still counts as a Northwestern win. Look at their schedule right now. They're 9-8. That win would have put them, you know, below 500. They would have been in a must-win position against a very strong Penn State team in the Big Ten semifinal. So right now, even if they lose this year, this coming weekend in the Big Ten semifinal, they're still at 500. You know, we saw it with Duke in the ACC. Duke needed to beat North Carolina in the first round of the ACC tournament, and they did not. So Duke, a team that would have been sitting on that bubble position, you know, likely in based on their RPI at 22 right now, Duke's not eligible for an at-large bid. They aren't 500. So that one win, you know, for Northwestern has put them in the driver's seat to stay 500, even if they don't produce wins this weekend, which is huge. And much to Johns Hopkins' detriment, because that's Johns Hopkins' quality win. Johns Hopkins certainly eligible to be an at-large bid. They're 11-6 right now, heading into the Big Ten semifinal. They'll play Maryland on Friday. But look at, you know, Johns Hopkins. They've lost to Penn, Maryland, Penn State, that Northwestern game we spoke about, Stony Brook, and a pretty huge loss to Towson. I mean, Johns Hopkins is coming off an 18-5 loss at the hands of Towson, their biggest loss of the season. So, you know, I think that Johns Hopkins' resume lacks that quality win. That quality win would have been that Northwestern game. You know, Northwestern is a team that is ranked in all of the polls. They sit 13 in the RPI right now. That would have been the marquee win that Johns Hopkins needs to get in. Granted, Johns Hopkins sits 18 in the RPI. So I think that it's going to come down to what other bubble teams are Hopkins being compared to down the stretch. You know, RPI, they could likely win head-to-head over, you know, look at some of these other bubble teams. You know, RPI head-to-head over Albany, over Notre Dame, over Temple, over Louisville. You know, Louisville's 29th in the RPI. They just beat Syracuse 2 weeks ago. But Johns Hopkins, you know, RPI head-to-head is a stronger RPI head-to-head than all of those teams. Significant wins? Hopkins doesn't have a significant win. So if they're being compared to Albany, Albany has a significant win over Cornell. That was a top 10 opponent when Albany took them down. So then you see head-to-head, they haven't played. Common opponents, who are their common opponents? I think it's just all based on who these bubble teams are compared to on the bubble. But Hopkins is in a precarious position where a win this weekend would all but guarantee them to move forward in the semifinals. That win would happen to come over an undefeated Maryland team that beat them 17-4 earlier in the season. So easier said than done. But, you know, I think that that's one of the teams this weekend that, you know, in addition to their performance in the Big Ten, kind of crossing their fingers and hoping that Florida wins the Big East, that Penn, Cornell, or Princeton win the Ivy and Harvard doesn't. They're hoping that things don't go awry in the CAA. I think that they're in a very similar position with a lot of other teams on this bubble because it's just been such a competitive year.
Hallie, looking down the bubble, another team that kind of sticks out to me that I didn't think would be a bubble team, and that's Temple. What is it about their resume that kind of has them in this conversation here?
Yeah, you know, Temple, they're an interesting team. You know, Temple, right now, they sit, you know, what are they, 13-4 on the season. A lot like Hopkins. You know, you look at their losses, Princeton, Denver, Florida. You know, those are three losses that, to me, they're not bad losses. They're not quote unquote significant losses. They're significant losses, UConn. You know, they're coming off a loss to UConn, a team that finished, you know, 500 on the season, 5-4 in the Big East. You know, Temple is going to determine its fate this weekend. You know, I think that they have a long road ahead of them. They're taking on the number one seed in the Big East tournament in Florida, a team that beat them 15-5 2 weeks ago. Temple is certainly on the bubble because of their RPI, you know, based on some other teams. They sit 24 on the RPI right now. But once again, it's going to come down to who they're being kind of compared to on that bubble. Where does the bubble line fall based on the automatic bids this weekend and conference champions? You know, for me, you know, looking at the bubble, even looking at a Hopkins, looking at a Temple, I'd like to see teams with significant wins in the NCAA tournament. You know, the fact that Notre Dame, even Louisville, the fact that Louisville is on the bubble and could potentially not get in the NCAA. I mean, they beat a Syracuse team that was on a roll, a streak through April, and they got that significant win late in the season, strong finish. It's definitely going to be an interesting Sunday. You know, I think that these bubble teams, it could go any which way. I think it's just going to be so unique to who they're being compared to. I think Towson's, you know, on that bubble, but likely out currently. But I've been proven wrong before. You know, who knows?
It's all going to be exciting. And Hallie, can you just tell everyone a little about the weekend as a whole? So your travel is a little bit nuts. And then where can people kind of catch up with this on Sunday? Where can they watch this bracket get unveiled? And how can they follow along?
Yeah, you know, I'll be hopping on a plane, heading down to Baltimore on Friday. I'm calling the CAA semifinals. You know, I'll be in the IL headquarters down in the Inner Harbor with you and the IL staffers on Saturday, really, you know, focusing on what happened on Friday night. There's so much of the semifinal action happens on Friday, although the Big East obviously does happen tomorrow. But, you know, we'll be taking Friday's results, analyzing them, and updating what will be coming out with this bracketology post. What does that mean for Sunday? What does that mean for Sunday night? And then, of course, you know, first thing in the morning, headed up to the Baltimore airport, flying to Indianapolis. I will be on the selection show as their color analyst. You'll be watching that on NCAA.com. And then come Monday, it's full steam ahead in the NCAA tournament. On IL Women, on Inside the Cross, we will be talking to coaches of teams that got in. You know, we'll be talking to some members of the coaching community that have intimate knowledge of what went on in that room, what went on in the NCAA selection committee room. And then, you know, we'll be looking at the week ahead. I can't even believe I'm saying this, but we'll be previewing the first round of the NCAA tournament. I'm still kind of wrapping my head around how it's May and it's not March. But, you know, here we are. And, yeah, I think a lot of exciting action to come in these next 72 hours, really.
Excellent, Hallie. We are looking forward to it. Please be sure to follow IO Women on Twitter and follow Hallie through this fun-filled weekend. Her Twitter account is HR Quillinan. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
IO Women Podcast, the source of her sport.